Good evening. Welcome to the September 10th, 2019 City of Black Diamond Planning Commissioners meeting. If you'll all join me in the flag salute, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Clerk, could we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Budd?
Present.
Commissioner Ekberg?
Here.
Commissioner Olson?
Present.
Commissioner Amber?
In my seat.
Commissioner McCain?
Here.
Commissioner Jensen?
Here.
And Commissioner LeConte?
Present.
Thank you. So next, we'll have a review of the minutes from the August 6th meeting. Commissioners, have you had a chance to review these minutes?
So on the second page, there's just a minor correction. Third paragraph, last word, commissions, change to commissioners. So with that, I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes of the August 6th meeting with the edit from commissions to commissioners.
Yeah, I'll second that.
So it's been moved and seconded to accept the meeting minutes from the August 6, 2019 minute with the edited correction. All of those in favor? Please.
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? The minutes are passed. Thank you.
I'm going to need Google for that one.
Please. So at this time, we'd like to ask anybody in the audience if they'd like to participate in the public comment time. Please, if you'd like to, step to the podium and cite your name and your city for the record. Seeing no visitors tonight, we will go ahead and move on to our next agenda item, which is a study work session. And Barb Kincaid, you're probably going to lead that for us.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. So as we have discussed over and over while we were working on our comprehensive plan update, which was the periodic update required every 7 years by the state Growth Management Act, we talked about how the amendments to a comprehensive plan should be done on an annual basis. And we had fallen behind on that. But tonight, I would like for us to talk about what I prepared in this memo for a preliminary docket and what that process is like, and entertain setting a hearing for the preliminary docket. So how the annual amendment process works, it goes through a docketing process. The first quarter of the year, anybody can suggest amendments to a comprehensive plan. The first quarter of the year, if a person wants to request a comprehensive plan land use change, you know, mapping change, or some of the text changes, maybe they have noticed that some of our policies aren't good, or they come up with one that would be very good that we don't have, it's okay for a citizen or staff or city council member or a planning commissioner to make these proposals. If it is a site-specific request, one person has land, let's say it's zoned residential, they would like to have us consider changing that to a commercial zone. By the end of March of every year, the end of that first quarter, they would need to submit an application for the preliminary docket to be considered. This year, we did receive one application from a landowner, but then upon having a pre-application meeting with them, they reconsidered and withdrew that application.
Is that really part of the comprehensive plan?
Mm-hmm.
Zoning changes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, because first of all, you have your future land use map that's adopted in the comprehensive plan. And if the future land use designation on somebody's property is low density residential and they think, well, gee, this would be, it makes sense for it to be high density or medium density, whatever the case would be, they would need to start making that change by asking for a comp plan map change.
Okay.
And then the zoning change. We don't have any applications, but what we do have is a kind of a small list, really, of the preliminary docket that I prepared for you. And these are things that were, as we go through, were things that happened during the formatting or things that we just didn't quite have time to address. It also opens up the public process for people to come in and know that we're considering changes, and they have another opportunity. Every year they have an opportunity to come in and request amendments. So the preliminary docket, the docketing process, as we start with this, what we're doing tonight with, I'm bringing you a preliminary docket. And after we talk about it, the Planning Commission would schedule and hold a hearing on the preliminary docket. You would, after taking testimony on the preliminary docket, if people came in and said, what about this, you forgot that, consider adding this, then you would conceivably change the preliminary docket. Once the hearing closes, you're going to transmit a recommendation to the City Council that this is what we think the amendment should be for this year. Then the City Council takes their actions. They do not have to have a hearing. They can if they want to, but they're the ones that actually agree with your recommendation on the preliminary docket and adopt it as the final docket. Lots of process. Then it goes back to you. At that point, you're actually doing the work, and you hold another hearing on the amendments. So this is first hearing that you would be holding is not on amending anything. It's just on what is being proposed to be amended. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay.
So is it a pass or fail thing, or do we line item stuff out that we don't?
You can line item stuff out, and so I provided you with my list, what I think. You may have noticed as we went through the comp plan amendment, all that work that we did, you might have some notes where you're like, you know, I think we need to maybe think about this, amending this. Maybe people have approached you after it was adopted. So this is the time. And we will be hearing from, I'm quite certain, folks that participated during our update that felt like they would like to talk some more and get more consideration about some of the issues that they had with the comp plan. So this is something that is like a yearly, just a yearly conversation with the community and the decision-making bodies, your recommending body, and then ultimately the decision-makers, the council. On page 2 of this memo, I have prepared a table for the preliminary docket to just talk you through that and kind of get some feedback. And I'm just going to launch into that if there aren't any questions. When we did the final editing after the adoption of the comp plan, or after your recommendation, actually, and the adoption, the formatting that I had so much trouble with, we deleted in the Parks, Recreation, Trails, and Open Space element in Chapter 3 of the plan. We either inadvertently deleted it or a picture, when you start moving things around in Word, a picture covered it up. So we lost three policies that we really didn't intend to lose. And we need to go through and add those back in through the formal process.
That'd have been Freudian.
I don't think so, but I've learned a lot about how to not edit. Now, how to not create it and edit a large Word document. Let's just put it that way. Hire somebody that does editing for a living is what I've decided. So these three policies are not new policies. They were in the recommendation that you all made in that Chapter 3, Parks, Recreation, Trails, and Open Space. But obviously, because they disappeared from the final document, they should be added back in. So that's the first one. Also, in that same Chapter 3 that I struggled with, we had Title 2 ADA language that disappeared. And this is, I think this was from our public testimony, somebody that pointed out that really we should be making sure in our planning framework that when we're doing any kind of review for parks and trails and recreation, that as guiding principle or criteria even, we do consider the ADA, the Title II ADA provisions. So I'm merely saying, oops, that got disappeared, and would really like to put that back in. In Chapter 4, which is our natural environment chapter, we had another mishap where one of the policies, NE21, about the use of low-impact development, LID, techniques, it disappeared. So I would like on this docket to put that back in. In the transportation element in Chapter 7, this was from a public comment that sort of I thought was a very good observation is in the policy that exists in the adopted T14, it's about character of the city policy. It has bullet points about how do you maintain in your transportation policies the character. And this person had written that we should contemplate adding that the implementation of different road standards for our older historic areas. So this policy would be new language that hadn't been in there before. I think it's something that the city, we need a policy first, really needs to work on. We run into this problem all the time because we've got a lot of old areas with existing development. The roads are not ever going to be up to road standards. And so it's like trying to shoehorn something in when these areas get infill. We don't have good road standards that will fit for these areas. So I'm recommending that we consider just adding that under as a bullet point, a new bullet point under policy T14 in the transportation element. And please stop me if you have questions or if you want to discuss something.
With this last one, I would just
excuse
say...
Excuse me, Commissioners.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I would just say that maybe when we discuss it in detail to have some examples so we can kind of picture what areas these are.
Sure. And in fact, I ran out of time, but before we would entertain a public hearing, before we open a public hearing, if you choose to set one for your next meeting, I would actually like to have a PowerPoint that shows these pages of the comp plan and the proposed changes and then examples of, I'm thinking a PowerPoint slideshow. So I could then show you what streets I'm imagining that would benefit from having different road standards.
Commissioner Amber, it seems a little contradictory that you want the city to preserve the character of the neighborhood with its existing older road standards, but then also enhance multiple modes of transportation. Because you're going to have, like on the streets here, you're going to have very limited space. I mean, sure, bicycles and pedestrians and cars go down it, but I don't know how, I mean, enhance multiple modes of, what do you mean by enhance?
Okay, so maybe a clarification on that. When I drafted that, I was thinking, and Seth and I have talked about this quite a bit, there are some streets that may work really well to have shared, instead of trying to build in space for all of these, for walkers and for bike riders and for cars, there are streets where they share the access. And to do that, you would want a lower speed limit and have the right signage. But that's kind of what we were envisioning, is that you're encouraging, you're not just building traffic, you're not just building roadway that's for roads are here, bikes, walkers on the sidewalk, because then, as you know, we don't have the space in those old areas to put that in. So instead of just allowing for the cars to be on the road and anybody that wants to ride or bike feels pretty unsafe, that's what we were envisioning. But I could see where your concern about clarification makes good sense.
Well, I don't think anything needs to be done with that. I mean, you're talking about building roads. Well, if you build a road, then it's going to be up to new standards. But if on existing old historic roads, I've never heard of any trouble on these roads up here on the hill.
Well, the problem comes into play when people want to do substantial redevelopment to these old homes, which some of that is happening, or if some of them are on larger lots and they want to infill, separate the lot and build a new home, that's where it triggers these improvements to the road based on the set that we work with that may not fit. It may not. That's what we're talking about.
But then if it does not fit with the current...
the road standards.
Road standards, then the development should not be permitted.
Well, I don't agree with you there.
Well, this is your house burnt down, and you went to get a building permit, and the new standard says you have to put a sidewalk in front of your house before you can get a new building permit, then you can't rebuild your house. Because that's not the current standard. That is the current standard.
I don't think that's...
Okay, commissioners, we have to introduce ourselves.
Oh, sorry, Commissioner. I mean, something like that, because there are certain codes that you have to put a sidewalk in front of your home if you're going to build a new house.
Well, okay, Commissioner Amber, the impression I'm getting is that not if you want to rebuild a single-family house, I mean, the exact same size house for the same people, but if you're looking at splitting a house into a fourplex or a property into a fourplex, that would be a dramatic change to the streetscape. And if the street cannot handle a fourplex, then, I mean, if the property is big enough for a fourplex, but the street can't handle it without major improvements, then I would imagine that fourplex could not be permitted if the road is historic and nobody's going to change the road.
Well, yeah, it's not the road that's historic. And so we're really talking about how do you allow for infill development that would fit the zoning, that wouldn't trigger frontage improvements or roadway improvements, that's going to destroy the way that neighborhood is existing. There's probably not enough right of way to do it, so there's that possibility that then you're not allowing for infill because your standards don't allow for it if somebody can't make those improvements that are required for the design guidelines. Or the alternative is if the property is zoned and they can do it, then you have to require they do those improvements according to the design guidelines, and then you end up with something that just doesn't fit the rest of the road profile. It doesn't fit the
Commissioner Amber, mm-hmm. So then because it doesn't fit the existing area, it would not be permitted.
Well, it would be. You wouldn't, if the underlying zoning allows for, let's say, and it would be helpful, I think, as Commissioner Olson has pointed out, it would be helpful if we actually had pictures of where we're thinking about. And Pacific Place, you know, that area off of 5th and Pacific Place, that's an area that historically, you know, it's built. I mean, but it has still some potential for infill, and the zoning allows for it. And in fact, the city, you know, you would want to encourage infill that meets the standards, the lot sizes and all that stuff. But having that one lot that develops as an infill lot have to meet these guidelines and you're right, in many cases it doesn't pencil out for them anyway, so they don't do it. But in some cases where they do it, you end up with a lot of disruption to the existing character of the neighborhood. So,
and Commissioner Olson, these were suggested by people, right?
This was a suggestion that I thought was a good one.
So we should probably at least let it go out to the hearing so people can make public comment on it, and then we can debate it from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think that it's showing you some ideas, areas. Mm-hmm. Where I think that it might make sense the idea is to try to have roads and mobility that is the scale of the neighborhood. And it fits the way that people live when you go down kind of, you know, back behind Baker and, you know, Second Avenue and stuff. If these areas had, not that they, it's even possible because there's not enough right of way there, but if you could imagine, we have to work with what we have in a way that still allows for people to do infill on lots that have space for infill. That's my take on it anyway. But
yeah, Commissioner McCain, if we don't maintain the flexibility with these road standards, we'll never be able to comply with our ADU policy that we just put in place, because all of that generates so extra cars, and we've got to figure this out, especially on the older parts of town. So I think that's probably a good idea. The road standards in town with infill, somebody who has the right to develop their property to the maximum for their retirement or whatever, that we have to have and maintain some flexibility with that. And that's a good idea and a separate conversation. We don't want the road standards to be so rigid that we shut down everybody's ability to develop their private property.
But I think that we can, like I said, next month, if I have some illustrations of specific areas and be able to clarify, then that'll help in the conversation too. Because I get what you're saying for sure.
It's just a contradiction.
Well,
Commissioner, I think it's more of an aesthetic thing. Because mm-hmm. eventually property values are going to get to where someone's going to build on a lot. Now, if they have to give up another 20 feet of theirs and put a bike lane and a sidewalk in front of their house that goes right into the two neighbors' properties because they had to do that. And do you want that down your, you're walking down the street and then you go back 10 feet to walk onto their sidewalk, but their sidewalk lines up with the two neighbors' front yards because they had to give the extra 20 feet to make it work. It just would never, I mean, people wouldn't do it right away, but as values go up, somebody would eventually do it and it just wouldn't look good.
Right.
Yeah, so that you're, but you would force them into that scenario. Because they have to, it's only 40 feet wide, well, they're going to have to make 60. Well, the only way to do that is to put 20 feet onto their own property and put a sidewalk on theirs, and it lines up, and it just doesn't, it's aesthetically, it wouldn't look good.
Right. Commissioner Amber, yeah, that I agree. That's not what I'm trying to I'm not making my point clear, but yeah, I agree, and that's not what I'm thinking.
Perhaps, Commissioner McKay, perhaps we can move on from this particular topic and get to these next ones, understanding that Ms. Kincaid is going to bring us more support information. Would that be okay? Okay.
But that was good. That was a really good, and it's great because whenever I bring you some new ideas, you really start to talk about it. That's how I can tell you paid attention to all the old stuff we've already hashed out. Because nobody batted an eye at this other stuff. You're like, yeah, we remember that.
We get ice cream.
Yeah. So the Appendix 7 in transportation, this is, do you remember Puget Sound Regional Council? They have to certify our plan. They sent us a letter, and I thought that I had done a pretty good job incorporating their comments, but I did miss something that was very important to them. The comp plan as it reads is this crossed out version kind of at the bottom where we talk about the DOT proposing minor widening to SR 169. This ruffled a lot of feathers because it didn't happen. It started to happen years ago. They never finished their corridor plan. There is no modeling, or there are no projects. It isn't consistent with the regional transportation plan, and so the request was that I remove it to get our plan certified. So what I'm proposing is this paragraph under WASDOT in SR 169 that they have jurisdiction. They have not completed a route development plan for the SR 169 corridor, and therefore the demand modeling, the state's regional transportation plan does not assume widening of SR 169. But I had to make sure that they recognize that all of the analysis that we have done in our transportation work, we did not assume the widening. We don't depend on the widening. And that the city is even though we have no control over what the state does for the congestion and the impacts that we have for our growth, that the city is being very proactive, and we are asking developers for additional right-of-way. If the right-of-way along the SR 169 is less than 100 feet, because we know that ultimately we're going to need to add something there, and it's going to be the city's responsibility to show that we have been working on acquiring that right-of-way that's going to be needed eventually. And also wanted them to know that another proactive is that we are working on access management along the SR 169 highway to coordinate with the DOT and also the MPD, the master plan developer, that to build these necessary improvements that do add capacity along the corridor. So this was language that I did touch base with the PSRC planner, and I asked her if this is what she was kind of thinking, and she said she thought that would suffice to make them feel like they were really worried that the city, all this growth was predicated on getting SR 169 widening. And I said, no, it really isn't. And that isn't accurate about them, what we had stated in there. So that's why I'm proposing that for comp plan amendment.
Commissioner Amber, is the roundabouts and stuff that are planned mm-hmm. for 169 that the developer is supposed to pay for, mm-hmm. are those part of what they objected to, or are those already planned and going to happen?
The one is under design for the Roberts 169 and Ravensdale alignment. That's in design, so that is already, they're pretty far along working with the DOT on getting that design approved, and then course, then you have to have that done before you can start construction. But
right.
they're getting very close. They've been working with that. So that in itself is already going to help somewhat.
Okay, so it'll be a big roundabout and two lanes coming in on two lanes going out on each end?
I'm not sure what the final design is going to be. It's been interesting listening to Andy because he's been doing the work with the DOT and his engineers, and the city's pushing to be able to construct to a full build-out capacity, but the DOT is concerned about over-constructing. You know how they never like to build things big enough, and then they always have to go back and fix it. So that's what he's run into, even so that initially there wouldn't be a need for the two lanes because the transportation numbers don't warrant that it needs to have that much capacity. But he's saying, like, hey, that's true, but we could just put the one lane in now, build the center of that roundabout big enough so that you could just put another lane in the center instead of having to rip it all up and start over. And interestingly enough, he's getting kind of some pushback on what I think is a really logical approach. But
yeah, why do it twice?
Mm-hmm. But that's under, and I have no idea where they're going to land with that, you know, because the DOT does ultimately get to approve the design. So, but the roundabout is going to happen there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So then we have another thing in the table 09, which I attached the whole table. It's not necessary to have the whole table because what I'm proposing is just on the last cell of the last page of that table. And this was a request that came through all of the master plan developer and these transportation talks with the city. If you remember, the city has, not just the city, but the city and the MPD is sort of already conceptually showing where future roads would be, new roads would be built. One of the things they have is the Southeast Loop Connector, and the Oak Point has said that they would like for us to allow consideration of an alternative. They're not saying they don't want to do the Southeast Loop Connector, but the way that we show it in that figure, that map figure in the plan, they think they might need to look at an alternative configuration for the road. So,
Commissioner Olson.
Yes.
All of the others are within 7 to 20 years, so why would this deviate from those?
Within 7 years?
All the other ones are listed within 7 to 20 years, and this one's just different?
It's not. It's 7 to 20.
Okay.
Good eye. It should be 7 to 20. So it's the same, 7 to 20 unless triggered earlier. And so I don't have any issue with this idea that you, because this is very conceptual, it makes sense that you would, if they've already done enough sort of working and looking at the possibility of different alternatives for that connector to loop to hook in Lawson Hills MPD, then it's just a different alignment. Basically, they're saying we'd like the opportunity. I think they felt worried that we just showed that one area in our comp plan, and that if that didn't pan out, they couldn't shift to another alternative. I think it's, while it's important to know that this is conceptual, it's also important to know that it's conceptual to a point where we really anticipate the new roads coming in at the planning level. If that makes sense to you. So I think that I'm okay with them wanting to be able to look at feasibility of this different location.
Commissioner Amber, I would like to see what their alternatives are before I would agree to something like that.
Yeah, no, and I want to say that this is the planning level stuff. So we can show on the map figure where they're not eliminating the Southeast Loop Connector that you have in the comp plan. They're saying, oh, but we'd like to have sort of a different line. And I'll show you that on the map next month, where they're proposing that. I mean, they talked about they talked about it, but I wanted, I started to mark it up on the map to bring you, but I thought, let's make sure I understand what they're thinking.
Commissioner Amber, yeah, I'd like to see mm-hmm. concrete stuff from them before mm-hmm. I agree to changes to anything for them.
Yeah. And again, this isn't actually looking at alternatives. It's conceptual 2035 road network.
But that opens a crack, and they tend to take advantage of any crack that they get.
We'll put it on a map so you can see where that location is.
Good.
Okay. So that was really all I had on the preliminary docket, and I think this is an opportunity for you all also, if you, between now and next month's meeting, to think about are there other things that we should consider in our this 2019 annual amendment.
Commissioner Amber, what's the last one, amend figure 5-2?
It's like one of the most important things. Okay, so now moving on to the last one is the amendment of the land use map, because when we, and here I've got the figure 5-2, and it may be easier for you just to separate it, to look at them side by side. When we were going through our work last month on the zoning map changes that needed to be done to match the comp plan map, remember we saw some errors that needed to be fixed. So that because this figure 5-2 future land use map in this current form is the adopted official map, those errors have to be corrected through our amendment process. So this document that has the proposed amendments box on it, this is what the map would look like. It's got great call-outs, so you can see that detail. But the first thing is we took off that receiving areas layer, because it was way too messy. It was these little circles that kind of obscured where the MPD overlay was and what the underlying land use is, because we have an actual TDR map that we could insert into that would serve the same purpose to show where those receiving areas are. So that's the first thing, but then the other is Scribner's error in box number 1. So if you look at that call-out box, I believe that Commissioner Olson was the one that noticed this. It had last month. It had the wrong color. So the coloring showed it as the neighborhood commercial, but it should really, we never intended to change that land use designation. So we need to make sure that it's colored right, and it is community commercial. Scribner errors number 2 that we discovered is in this call out box number 2, and it is I have a new employee that's really good with GIS, and he knows how to actually drill into the data, and he noticed that there's a little tiny speck where it's pointing to that didn't have zone. It didn't have a land use designation, or it was unzoned, just because it was just a data problem. So we want to fix that data problem. That's the second one. Number 3 was a Scribner's error that you see the before and the after. That, and I think somebody also noticed this, it probably was Commissioner Olson again, where the park.
I'm just having a good week,
I guess. It could have been Commissioner Amber. Somebody pointed out in the adopted comp plan that park does not go all the way up where we showed it. So we fixed that. So we didn't really change anything. Again, it's just a fixing that map to correctly show where the park ends for the public land use, so that the area that is low density residential is showing correctly on this map. And then we took the TDR. And so these are not changes to our land use map. They're just fixing stuff that we noticed when we really started to look at it, when we were talking about how to change the zoning, what needed to be fixed or what needed to be amended in the zoning map to be consistent with what we adopted in our comp plan map.
Now, is the MPD overlay, that is just the MPD land, right?
Right, that's that cross-hatching, and I see that we didn't have that on the, unfortunately, the overlay isn't on your legend, but on the map, in the comp plan map, the MPD is an overlay that floats over the underlying land use designation. So that you know what is under there, but then on the zoning map, after a person that wants to build an MPD, they have to go through this process to have it rezoned. So in the zoning map, when we look at that next, you'll see that that's actually a zone. And in fact, if you want to pull out the zoning map, I can point out some. One reason is there's that little carve out on the land use map. There's a little area that on the land use map that shows it's got the MPD overlay. But if you compare this area on the zoning map, you'll see that it was never zoned. I've got all these future land use maps. Where's my zoning map? Yeah, this big area, that's all MPD. When the MPD was approved, they had some parcels that they called expansion parcels, expansion areas. So that's why more area on the comp plan has the MPD overlay, but they have never come in to request the rezone. So that's why you'll see that that's different, that MPD looks different on the zone. It's one of the few things that we have that's different between our comp plan map and our zoning map. As we get more, you know, I don't like using the word sophisticated, complicated maybe. As things get more complicated here, and as you know they are, we will probably not be able to stick with this sort of one-to-one land use zoning map. We'll have to get into more where, like in the comp plan map, you have low density residential, and the zoning map, we split it out to R4 and R6 zones. You're gonna see more of that striation where it's, because the land use, future land use map is supposed to be a more of a general intent for this area. It should always be low density. Well, low density could be R4, it could be R6. Well, this area should be medium density or high density. So you'll start, I think we'll have to start thinking about that, especially when, you know, so hopefully you'll all still be here in 10 years when the MPDs or 15 years when they're all done, because then we're gonna have to, the MPD zone will go. Will go away, and then we're going to have to create these zoning districts for areas that are very different than the rest of the city zoning. So,
Commissioner Olson, mm-hmm. I'm comparing these two maps right here.
The zoning map with the comp plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So right down here, you see the what color is this? What is that? Single family residential?
Single family R6 is how kind of that orange
kind of goes off into a boot or whatever. That's not on the these, right?
Right.
And so was that a change on this one? Or when did that change?
So on the zoning map, you'll see what you have is, it's not a change to the zoning map. It's the same on the adopted zoning map. It's the same on, we're not proposing any change. And on the comp plan map, the underlying land use, that's you really illustrating what I was just trying to explain beautifully.
Okay.
The underlying,
that's what I meant to do.
Yeah, the underlying land use is low density residential. Low density residential can be zoned R4 and R6. Thank you. That was a good illustration.
You're welcome.
Way to, Does that make sense to people? So the request here is to finish up the comp plan docket conversation is to accept that we have to include changes to Figure 5.2, the future land use map, because we found mistakes, mapping mistakes that need to be fixed, and that needs to be on our docket.
And Commissioner Olson, does this have to go to a hearing?
Yes. Yeah, the preliminary, this will have hearing twice. It'll have preliminary docket hearing, and then it'll also have the hearing on the actual amendments.
So I'm at public.
Pardon?
Does it have to be have a public, whatever we do when we open it up to the public?
Yeah, the public hearing.
The public hearing,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Public hearing on this list in case people want to come in and ask us to add different things to the docket. And then once that gets finalized, and council's going to finalize this, then you're actually going to hold a public hearing on the amendments themselves. So whatever this list ends up looking like in its final form, that's what you'll be having a public hearing on those items.
All right, Commissioner Amber, it says on the future land use map that we're looking to adopt, the receiving TDR layer has been removed. Where was the receiving area TDR on the May 2nd land use map?
It's these, all of these little green dots. This, so on the MPD and the adopted map, you have so many layers that you couldn't really see the underlying land use because you have the, you know, the base land use.
Okay, all right, I
then
see.
Then you had the MPD crosshatch, and then you had the circles for the receiving area. It was pretty messy and not really necessary because we do have a TDR map that just shows on the sending and receiving sites. So I think we should just take that off because I think it makes the map hard to read.
Okay, so the TDR areas have not changed, you just have them on a separate map.
Exactly.
Okay.
So are we comfortable with leaving the comp plan docket and moving on to our unfinished business portion of the agenda?
Commissioners?
Yes.
All right. Unfinished business. So zoning map and zoning map changes.
So then this other set of maps that we've already kind of delved into. The back map is the current zoning map. And then based on the changes from what we did in our comp plan update, we did change some areas. We actually changed 8 areas, and they're listed as call-outs. And then he's got, Joey made this map for us, so he's got the green dotted line around the proposed changes to the zoning map, and then he also has a call-out that lists the parcels that would be changed and from what to what. So this is very, very helpful for the public to understand what parcels, at the parcel level, what changes. So this isn't anything new than what we've already talked about. It's just a cleaner map because the other map wasn't clear. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to, I promise you I'd bring you a better map back. And
thank you, Dorr.
All right, Commissioner Amber, so these parcels to be affected, that has already been done?
No, this is on the table being proposed.
Are we taking any action on that, or are we just approving the map coloring?
You have to hold a hearing for this.
Okay.
So I just kind of wanted to make sure if you had other things you wanted to talk about, these proposed changes that we did it, but I would like to have you schedule a public hearing on the comp plan amendment preliminary docket and on the planning commission, or excuse me, on the proposed changes to the zoning map.
These were done with the last comp plan update? Mm-hmm. These weren't part of the last comp plan update?
Well, what happened was we changed the comp plan map, and we changed some of the land use designations on the comp plan map. Now we're playing, now we have to take the zoning change through.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you can do them at the same time, but we just didn't have the bandwidth to do it. That's why I want to hurry up and get this map changed. It has to be changed by ordinance to match the comp plan changes that we've already made. We're lagging behind. So we have an inconsistency. Our land use designation map says one thing on these parcels, but our zoning map says something different, and that's not good.
Any other questions, commissioners?
So are we, Commissioner
Sorry.
Amber,
oh.
Are we commenting on the changes or
no?
Well, we kind of went through them at the last meeting and how they needed to be made because we had already
I thought it was.
We kind of walked through. We can walk through them again if you want to. But then pointing out why the zoning needs to be changed because we've already made a decision in the comp plan update to change the land use designation.
Okay.
So if you want to go through that, we can do that and make sure that you're comfortable based on the comp plan map that we didn't, you know, pull anything out that isn't accurate.
Well, Commissioner Amber, I didn't think that we changed these parcels like number 2 and number 3.
Did.
I didn't think that we changed those from business to residential. I thought those were going to be like neighborhood commercial or whatever.
No, number 2 and number 3, business park, they were, as you can see, that they were.
Medium density.
We have to go all the way back to. We have to go back to the figure, the land use map figure before we adopted this one, but we did make those changes when we did the comp plan update.
Okay, and I thought so, we changed them to. To neighborhood commercial, not residential.
No, not those 2 and 3. They went to MDR 8. So we talked about, we had quite a bit of the business industrial park, and property owners thought that they would that it made better sense for them to be residential, and we workshopped on that and agreed to make that change.
Okay, I don't remember that, so I must not have been here.
No, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
Commissioner, I think it was before I was here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, because, yeah, I just can't imagine. I would have thought that more residential would have been the way to go, but...
Yeah, we did do more residential, MDRA'd.
Yeah.
And Commissioner McCain, we had talked about some vertical residential stuff going on there, you know, with some commercial on the bottom and some units on top, kind of a multi-story effect.
Well, in this, all of this red, which does actually include these two and three right now, and in the comp plan, so it was all supposed to be at one time business park industrial, but the reality is how much business park industrial is really needed. And then the idea that we talked about is that it makes sense to allow for some housing, not real high density housing, but denser housing on the fringe of this, because then you create a situation where people are, they have a place to live potentially on the fringe of a business industrial park. So they could maybe work there and live, you know, within walking distance. So that's the concept. Okay. We did change in number four though. That's where we went from, maybe this is what you're thinking about. We changed in number four from a residential to a commercial, neighborhood commercial.
Well, I remember that.
Okay.
And I remember changing number five to community commercial.
Okay.
But I don't remember changing two and three.
We haven't changed anything, have we?
We haven't changed the zoning, but we did make the change on the comp plan.
Back in the comp.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it has been a while.
It is finished.
Can I just go?
All right, Barb, the setback conversation.
Yes, yes. So would you entertain commissioners setting a public hearing for your October, actually two public hearings for your October 8th meeting, one on the preliminary comprehensive plan docket and the other on the proposed zoning map changes?
What does that have to do with setbacks? I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to the next bullet point on our unfinished business.
Or do we need to make a motion?
Well, I just kind of want you to all agree. You can make a motion if you want to do it formally. Usually setting a public hearing is kind of an important step. You're agreeing to set a public hearing, but I just want it on the record.
So,
because I don't decide to hold a public hearing. You have to make that decision.
And so that is. So I guess, does anybody disagree? This is Commissioner Olson. Disagree with the changes we've gone over, or are we all in agreement? And if so, then I guess we just pick a date and do it.
Correct. And Commissioner McCain, I just have a question. Does that conversation include the setback conversation or not?
No.
Okay.
No, that is unfinished business item B, and we haven't started talking about that yet.
Okay.
This is just on the zoning map.
All right.
A.
Good.
So, all right. Unfinished business A could be finished business.
I see.
Maybe.
So, do we have to make a motion to have
you
a public hearing?
You don't have to make a motion, but I think if you all agree to set a public hearing, and if you make that on the record, that when people are listening to this, you know, to this record, then they can say, aha, the commissioners are holding a public hearing on October 8th. And they're going to hold two hearings, but you need to say that.
So, this is Commissioner Olson, and I'd like to make a motion to hold a public hearing on the zoning map and zoning code changes on
Well, it's just the zoning map change.
Correction, zoning map change.
Mm-hmm. And a public hearing on the comp plan.
And a public hearing on the comp plan with the discussed changes.
Mm-hmm. On October 8th.
On October 8th.
I second. Commissioner Button.
So it's been moved and seconded.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Then I will get the notices out. We have to notice these pretty far in advance. And thank you very much.
And let's step back a step, that we will take a vote on the motion that's on the floor that was made and seconded to have the comp plan on October 8th. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. So we will look forward to that public hearing on October 8th to get the public's input on these changes. Thank you, Ms. Kincaid.
Thank So now unfinished business B, setbacks. You remember we started workshopping on setbacks, and I brought to you, just wanted to start talking about maybe it would be a good idea for us to think about changing our setbacks. You asked me to come back with some comparisons on other cities. Beanham Plus, Sumner, and Auburn is what we wrote down in our notes. And so I just wanted to sort of bring that back to you so we can continue that discussion. And I don't expect any action. It's just, and I also would really like to be able to prepare for you a better, some illustrations, which I didn't have time for this meeting. But in Enumclaw, their residential setbacks are pretty large. It's 20 in the front, 9 on the sides, and 25 in the rear for residential. And if you remember, ours are 20 and 7, and I was trying to get you to think about making them smaller. Hmm. What's interesting in Enumclaw, though, is they treat the setbacks for accessory buildings and ADUs differently. So an accessory building, which we don't, an accessory building can be built as the setback, side yard setback for an accessory building is only 3 feet. And an ADU side setback is 7.5. So that's how Enumclaw treats it, which I thought was an interesting approach that maybe we want to think about thinking about treating an ADU or an accessory structure differently from the main residential structure. In Sumner was interesting. They were more focused, and I can see this because Sumner is a more of a linear block kind of thing. They have a minimum front. So your front minimum is 15, but they have a maximum. You can't build any further than 25. So their minimum is 15 in front and the maximum is 25. So they don't want people to be set too far back because then it would ruin that aesthetic line. Their rear yard is 25. Their side is 6 or 5 for smaller lots. So they actually kind of say, well, if you've got a smaller lot, we'll give you another foot on the sides.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Auburn is where I was trying to get you guys to go, is 10 in the front. But if you have a garage, a front street-facing garage, it has to be set back 20. So your house is in front, your garage is set back a little further, so you're not looking at that garage door. Their rear yard is 20, and their side yards are 5.
Commissioner Olson, so I guess when we're looking at these cities, we really have to take that into consideration on the look, huh?
Uh-huh. And that's with our city. We're not all nice, tidy, neat blocks, We're kind of, so I will, I really do think it would help us to visualize if I could just have some time to sort of sketch some stuff out that we could look at. And I'm going to try real hard to do that as we continue this discussion. But I also provided a handout about zero lot line because I want, as we think about this setback and how our setbacks are in this city and what whether or not what we have is should be a one-size-fits-all, should it? Because your MDR-8, your R-4, and R-6, they have the same setbacks. So they don't take into account lot size or density. Maybe we want to think about that. But zero lot lines is the hot thing, and I am getting a lot of people that want to take, they're asking, do you have a zero lot line allowance? And so this little handout I thought was kind of a nice little way to describe and show what that is for people that don't know. You would essentially take one side of your yard setback and the house goes right to the property line. And where that's really well liked by developers is because it can maximize their site plan so that they can get the things that they want to get. If you have to divvy up the side yard and put something in the middle, you actually waste space. Whereas if you can slide it over to that one side, it gives you more room to get the rest of your driveway, your garage, or things in there. So I didn't expect any action. I just wanted to hand this out because I thought it was kind of an interesting discussion about what if and how does it look. Yes.
Commissioner LaConte, there's an error in this picture, right?
Yes. I saw that too. I was reading and I'm like, one does two. Yeah, I saw that too.
Okay.
So yeah, but two is a good illustration.
Yeah.
And so
one and two should look the same.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Isn't that funny? So just to kind of consider and just to kind of keep this topic in our minds, and then I'd like to continue with a meteor workshop next month.
Mm. Meteor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. So we're going to move to our next agenda item number 7, and the Community Development Department report. I would assume that is Ms. Kincaid.
We have a lot going on. I know every time I talk to you, we have a lot going, but more and more stuff comes in. In a month, it's pretty astounding, and we're all wondering. It's almost like, be careful what you wish for. We've got short plats, we have commercial site plans to review, binding site plan to review for potential commercial on SR 169. We have expecting a senior housing project out at Lake Sawyer, right at the intersection where, you know, across the street from Lake Sawyer Grocer. We have the mini storage units. They're on our plate now. They got through their Army Corps of Engineer process, which took them 2 years on the wetland. So we're reviewing that. And it's just incredible how all of a sudden this pent-up development energy is starting to go. So it's been pretty amazing to go from, you know, nothing to all of a sudden piles of stuff that we're behind on to review. And they have timelines, which is kind of why I'm juggling Planning Commission and Development Review. But it's all been very, very good.
And staffing, how's that going?
Staffing's going great. We have a vacancy for a building inspector. We had been using our fallback as the consultants to do inspections, which gets expensive, and we're getting ready to post for that building inspector job. But the staff that we have in place now has been, we've just got a tight team going, and it's such a pleasure to work with these people. I've got good professionals, and everyone works hard.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That's good to know.
Yeah.
All right. Is that the end of your report?
It is.
At this point in time, we're going to move to agenda item number 8 and ask for any other public comment.
Oh, I neglected something very important. I'm sorry. Sign code.
Oh.
Yes, sign code is coming up. It's on our work plan, and I do have the attorneys taking the first crack at the sign code. So you're going to be seeing probably a sign code in November to start working on. I want us to hold up maybe a public focus group, too, and get people from different professions and interests in, because signs affect the business people and the, you know, public service. And so, but anyway, that's going to be a big one. It's long needed.
Well, from a public safety perspective and site distance and all that, the A boards have just got to, they've got to go, or we have to have some different control, because they really make it difficult for you to pull in and out sometimes because we don't have any real good regulations on that. So thank you, Ms. Kincaid. So we will move to public comments. Anybody, we have no public tonight, we look forward to that next month. And at this point in time, with all that we've discussed, appreciate everybody's input tonight. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
I would like to make a motion to adjourn.
And a second?
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded that we adjourn this meeting. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? All right. Thank you very much, commissioners.
Thank you, guys.